Hi, and welcome to the Conservation and Human Dimensions podcast series. Today we'll be exploring persuasive communication and behavior change. I'm Natalie Sexton. I'm the branch chief in the Human Dimensions branch of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service at the Natural Resource Program Center in Fort Collins, Colorado. This podcast is part of our effort to put tools and resources into the hands of natural resource practitioners, and it's a collaboration with the National Conservation Training Center. Here with me today is Dr. Sean Davis and Lori Brown-Large. Sean is a professor of communications at Northern Michigan University, specializing in environmental communications, and Lori is a social scientist and designs behavior change programs for municipalities and nonprofit organizations. Hi, guys, and thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you.
We're actually here at NCTC delivering a Human Dimensions Foundations course with folks from the Fish and Wildlife Service, Park Service, and Forest Service, and we've been talking about communication and the purpose of communication. Whether explicit or not, we're almost always hoping and expecting a change in behavior with our communication. But as we know all too well, and it's really been documented extensively in the literature, information alone doesn't change behavior. So what do we need to communicate beyond information to affect behavior change?
Well, I think there's essentially three things that we need to consider when we're looking to change behavior. Chip and Dan Heath talk about these three things that we need to change behavior in their book Switch, and they use a great analogy. They talk about how every behavior change starts with a path and an elephant and a rider. The rider would be our cognitive or intelligence trying to direct what we want to do, whereas the elephant would be our emotional side. Now, of course, an elephant is way more powerful than the rider can actually steer. So if we can get them both lined up on the same path, if we can align the situation for the behavior change, then we can actually change someone's behavior. All too often, I think we appeal to the emotional side. We'll say, conserve wildlife or save this endangered species. And that stimulates us emotionally. But the rider, or our cognitive side, doesn't have a specific path to direct that emotion on. It can't figure out how we get there. So this kind of lends to us needing to be more specific in how we frame the behavior change.
For example, if you think about asking people to recycle, if you think about barriers to recycling, say mail versus the barriers to recycling peanut butter jars or plastics, they're very different. So in our communications, we need to be specific about how to achieve those behavior changes. There could also be the matter of convenience. If you don't have a recycler, you have a household that is not recycling at all, does simply including a basket in the kitchen where they can do the recycling make it more easy, then more likely to achieve the behavior change?
Well, that's really interesting, this issue of being more specific, because I know in the Fish and Wildlife Service, we're encouraging people to protect wildlife and their habitats. That's part of our mission. That's pretty broad. Even if we think about a species like monarchs, it sounds like the behavior really needs to be more specific than conserve the monarch. Maybe that doesn't give people enough information to do anything about the issue. So just thinking about monarchs, we've been talking a lot about that in our agency and thinking a lot about it. How do we get people to protect them?
If we think about the goal we're trying to achieve, so what specifically do we want people to do in order to save monarch populations? I think beginning with the list of behaviors that would help us achieve that goal, and on that list, perhaps planting milkweed, and if it's we're asking people to plant milkweed, what type of milkweed do we want them to plant? Do we need monies for some of the conservation efforts that might be taking place on public lands? So, you know, making that list of very specific behaviors will then help us to create communications that will then achieve our goals.
I also think it's a lot to do with convenience. The more that we can shape a new behavior to an existing behavior, the more successful that we're going to be to actually change the behavior in question. Going back to the recycling question from before, one of the most successful ways that they've been able to get populations of people to recycle is to make it exactly like we do our garbage pickup. People would take their garbage and put it into a trash can, take it out to a curb, and it gets picked up, and then they take the empty can back inside. By having curbside recycling follow that same pattern, we make it very convenient for the people who want to start recycling to actually recycle. Looking at this same situation with the monarch population, perhaps we have this information and the actual milkweed that we would like people to plant at garden centers, at the places where they're going to go pick up their plants that they're going to plant into ground and garden anyway, then the milkweed's there, information's right there, it's very convenient, and it's a part of a behavior that they're already doing.
Well, there's certainly been a lot of emphasis on planting milkweed as one behavior, and that's great. I'm wondering, though, what about people who don't garden or don't have yards that are conducive to planting that? How do we think about behavior change for that?
Well, that's an excellent question, Natalie. And it gets to the number one rule, really, in communication, which is know your audience. You need to understand what motivates them, their values and attitudes towards certain things, to find out where you can change certain behaviors. And it kind of goes back to when we don't know the answer to this question, looking at positive psychology or bright spots, in a sense. When we look at populations of people that we're looking to have change of behavior, we look at who's already doing that behavior that we want to have changed. And we see what's motivating them, what's working for them, and how can we replicate that? If you think about the issue with perhaps getting more urbanites into natural lands for recreation and so forth, to do this, we might want to look at, instead of what we normally focus on, the problem of who's not going, we look at who is going and what are they doing that's different from the people who aren't going, and how can we replicate that situation to help change the behavior to get more people out into those natural areas.
You make a really good point, Sean, and that is that when you have low numbers, in other words, the behavior is not yet normative, then you start with those who are engaging in the behavior and you use social diffusion. And by social diffusion, what I mean is that you're starting with those who are engaging in the behavior, and then you give them the means, some tools to encourage their social circles to engage in the behavior as well. So they're doing some modeling. They're influencing others just by engaging in the behavior. And so once you start with, when you have those small numbers, social diffusion is very effective. And then really what you're trying to achieve is a social norm. Once the numbers get up, then we've got a social norm.
So those early adopters become the champions then of that behavior.
Absolutely.
Well, let me throw this one at you. Some practitioners may not really be comfortable with trying to change behavior. We're supposed to be in this business for protecting and conserving wildlife and habitats, right? For some, it may feel a little sneaky or even manipulative. How do you respond to that?
That's a great question. I actually get that question a lot from people who are starting to learn some of these different communication techniques. And I think we have to remember, and we go back to the fact and the point that we started with, that all communication, in a sense, is looking to change some sort of behavior at its root. When you look at the mission of U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, it's to work with others to conserve, protect, and enhance fish, wildlife, plants, and their habitats. And all of those, when you look at those words, those are all actions. Those are all behaviors. And they're all pro-environmental behaviors. They're all good behaviors that we believe in. So I don't see a problem at all with looking to change behaviors for these positive values for what we're trying to achieve. Communication is just another tool that we can use to achieve those goals.
And I think too, Sean, if what you're trying to achieve are effective communications, you wouldn't do that from the confines of your office. You would get out of your office and you would talk to your target audience in order to find out about what motivates them, what are their values, and what are their current behaviors. And you would leverage those things in communicating to them. So you're actually being quite transparent.
Good. Well, that hopefully is reassuring to folks who may have those concerns. This has been great. I'm wondering, what are some other resources that you recommend for folks if they want to learn more about persuasive communication and behavior change?
Well, I would say the book that I mentioned earlier by Chip and Dan Heath, Switch, is a great book. It's an easy read. It gives a lot of examples and stories of successful behavior changes in the past that have happened when change is difficult, when we might not have the resources and the things that we think are necessary for change. And it spells out that three-point situation I described before of having the elephant rider on a path and how to use those different pieces to actually initiate change.
Oh, that's good. I'm excited to look at that one because I've read their other book, Made to Stick, and it's actually really enjoyable. It's really funny, and I know that one was on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah, that's a great book.
Yeah.
Well, at the foundation of all of the work that I do is Doug McKenzie Moore's book, Community-Based Social Marketing, Fostering Sustainable Behavior. And it's a five-step process. You could think of it as kind of engineering. So at every step, there's data. And so you're not moving forward without, you know, making an informed decision. Very important process that I believe in.
Well, that brings up a great point that we don't always have the full understanding of the motivations for behavior. And in certain situations, we may need more social science data and information, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that needs to be done rigorously so that we can make some informed choices.
And ultimately, reach our goals, reach our program goals.
Well, thank you both, Lori and Sean. I really appreciate you being in the studio today with me. If our viewers have questions or would like to follow up, would it be okay if they contacted you?
Absolutely.
Of course, and thanks for having us here.
And what would be the best way to do that?
My email address is large, L-A-R-G-E, at action3630.com.
And I can be emailed at shawdavi at nmu.edu.
Great. We have several podcasts in the works. We've been in the studio a lot this week while we are here for our Human Dimensions training. And all of our podcasts can be found on the NCTC podcast page, which you can find by Googling NCTC podcasts. And you can also be notified of new podcasts by subscribing on iTunes. You just need to search Human Dimensions in Conservation in the podcast iTunes store. And when you scroll down, the podcast episodes will be available. And if you have ideas for future podcast topics, please email the Human Dimensions branch at human_dimensions@fws.gov. Until next time, thank you for tuning in.